Good morning, everybody. It's Sunday morning, 9 o'clock in London, actually just a little after 9 o'clock, because as sometimes happens, we've just run into a couple of technical difficulties. But here we are, Lizzie and Justin, here for week 65 of Turning Towards Life, which, as many of you will know by now, is a project that comes out of our work together in Third Space Coaching and has become a great source of both joy and solidity and practice for us. So as normal, this is our attempt to take up a topic which feels real and alive in a real and alive kind of conversation that is not prepared between Lizzie and I, apart from having seen this wonderful source that Lizzie has brought to us this morning, which is from one of my favorite books as well. So I'm really, really thrilled to be talking about that. So good morning, everyone.
Good morning, everybody. This is Lizzie here. I am in somewhere in Suffolk, which is with a wonderful friend of ours, mine and Justin's, Nina, who's also part of Third Space. So I'm in slightly unfamiliar surroundings and using somebody else's computer, which is why the technical difficulties arose. And so sorry for the delay. And just to say welcome to the new ones too, the new ones who are joining us. Every week, Justin does this really lovely thing where he tags the new people who've joined. And so we all get to see that our community is growing, and I want to just say a warm welcome to everybody who's new, and also for those of you who have been with us before in Turning Towards Life and who comment on things and who make us realise that people are listening. It's really wonderful that you do that, and we're really grateful for all the ways that you show us that you're joining in with the conversation. It's really wonderful for me. And every time we do these things, Justin and I both go on afterwards and look at the comments and look who was there. And it's always really lovely to see you. And we'll always reply to things as well. If there's anything that you wanted to ask in the comments, we can reply to those things and say something else about something that you're interested in or you didn't understand or whatever. So we're really appreciative of that. So this is a Third Space offering. So Justin and I are in Third Space together with three other wonderful colleagues. And we, as part of that, wanted to offer ourselves into the world in a way that people could get to know us more and also be in this conversation and create a real community around these topics that we would love to bring. And we haven't said this for a while, Justin, but this got born, didn't it, from a conversation on a train where we were talking about something really cool. And I was like, oh my gosh, this shouldn't just be for us. You know, there's this big feeling of, I wish this could be for more people than just us having this amazing conversation. And so hopefully we've come a long way to doing that and fulfilling that idea of just being in other people's worlds as well as our own with these topics. So I wanted just to say a bit of background about this source, which is that I'm reading a very wonderful book by somebody called Parker Palmer, called The Courage to Teach. And at the beginning of each of his chapters, he has these little sayings, and this is one of them. So I don't actually know the once and future king, Justin. So if you can say more about the once and future king, that'd be amazing. But this quote got me because it feels like somehow when we're feeling really terrible, when we're feeling the kind of depth of sadness that we don't know what to do with ourselves about, or we're feeling depressed, or we're feeling, you know, we're having a prolonged sense of unease or anxiety or whatever it is. I feel like so often in the world, we turn to the wrong things and it doesn't turn out that it shifts or changes. And when I was reading this, I suddenly felt the importance of the way that we talk about learning and the way that I and you, I know, orient towards life, which is this kind of openness. And so this source really hit me as a way of beginning the conversation about what it means to be a learner and how that learning might be a way through so many things, rather than finding solutions or trying to change things that seem kind of intractable, the same pattern keeps arising or whatever. This kind of orientation around learning feels really, really important. So shall I read it and then you read it and then you say something about the source, Justin? Does that sound
Sounds great. Yeah. I'll say only one thing about the source, Lizzie, yeah. which is The Once and Future King is a book about King Arthur. And I read it in my teens. I haven't read it since then. But when I was about 13 or 14, it was a shared favourite book between a group of us at school. So it has a very, very tender place for me. But actually, Parker Palmer has an even bigger place. I didn't know this was from The Courage to Teach, which I also think is an absolutely magnificent book that is really for everyone. It's not just for people who want to teach. It's for anyone who's got a big heart and a big mind and wants to engage deeply with the world. And I so want to recommend it to everyone.
Okay, so here we go. The best thing for being sad, replied Merlin, is to learn something. That is the only thing that never fails. You may grow old and trembling in your anatomies. You may lie awake at night listening to the disorder of your veins. You may see the world around you devastated by evil lunatics, or know your honour trampled in the sewers of baser minds. There is only one thing for it, then, to learn. Learn why the world wags and what wags it. That is the only thing which the mind can never exhaust, never alienate, never be tortured by, never fear or distrust, and never dream of regretting. Learning is the thing for you.
Gosh, it's fabulous to hear you read that. I'm going to read it too. So Merlin, is Merlin the wizard? The best thing for being sad, replied Merlin, is to learn something. That is the only thing that never fails. You may grow old and trembling in your anatomies. You may lie awake at night, listening to the disorder of your veins. You may see the world around you devastated by evil lunatics, or know your honor trampled in the sewers of baser minds. There is only one thing for it, then, to learn. Learn why the world wags and what wags it. That is the only thing which the mind can never exhaust, never alienate, never be tortured by, never fear or distrust, and never dream of regretting. Learning is the thing for you.
It feels in opening to hear you say that to me. Like there's a way forward when that's always there when it feels like I can't find one. And there's always things that we don't know or haven't experienced or haven't taken up in our daily lives. And because that's inexhaustible, it feels like there's hope. When you've tried everything, there will always still be learning. And so it feels very like a welcome hopefulness that comes in reading that.
Yeah. I think it's something that makes us human. Mm. Is that's, as long as we have any kind of faculty, it's always available to us. And it's funny, you know, I've known this quote for a long time. I suppose that I probably saw it first in this form in Parker Palmer's book. I hadn't realized where I'd found it from. How helpful I found it in the few days since you posted it, Lizzie, just before the weekend. And I may have said this before, I know I've said it to you, but I may have said this before on Turning Towards Life, how shaky I can often feel. You know, I feel shaky about the world and, well, what I was going to say was, I feel shaky about the world and what's happening in it. But I realize that mostly when I'm feeling shaky, I'm feeling shaky about two things, which this really deeply addresses. The one is, I feel shaky because I don't understand the world. It's changing in all kinds of ways that I can't grasp. It's changing environmentally and politically and economically and technologically and, you know, all of those. And those stories about the changes in the world are not actually mostly things I experience firsthand. They're things that I read about, and then they very easily set me off into, I realize that for me, in one way or another, not feeling like I can grasp the world has been a source of feeling sad, but also trembling in my anatomies. I love this language. It's so fantastic. So that's one source of it. But the second source of it is that I'm coming to see, and I think this is really deeply tied into the way I know that we think about learning in our the work that we bring to the world in Third Space as well, is that but what has me often be shaky are my own fixed stories about myself and how I should be in the face of this world that I understand so little of. And that as I go through life and I find that I understand less and less, you know, the limits of my understanding become more and more clear, and what was felt stable and secure in the past and easy to understand reveals itself as ever more mysterious and ever more confusing and ever more complicated. I'm starting to see that what's called for is one of two things that I think T.H. White might mean. So the first one is being really curious about the world so that I can have better stories. So better stories about who I am, and better stories about who other people are, and better stories about what's possible that are feel truthful, and also feel like they open up spaces in which I can act so that I'm not frozen or despairing or hopeless, which are all easy stories to have if I have the wrong story about the world. So that's the first thing. The second thing is a bigger one, which is that sometimes I think, in fact, more and more I think, that the kind of learning that he's inviting here is, in a way, is letting go of stories. So the more rigid my hold is on the world, my attempt to hold onto the world, the more I lie awake at night listening to the disorder of my veins, which I have done repeatedly over the last couple of weeks, actually. It's a very familiar, this language is so familiar to me, which is why it's so brilliant and so helpful. So letting go of the rigidity of my own stories. And I've been thinking about this a lot since you brought this. I realize that it's very easy for me, and I suspect it's very easy for lots of us, to fall into stories and to hold on to them so tight. We're so sure that they're true, and they're stories that don't help us. And I have had, it's easy for me to have lots of stories about how I'm meant to be, what I'm meant to understand, what I'm meant to be able to do, what my life is meant to be like at X and Y stage, all of these kinds of things. And when I release myself into the kind of learning that I think is invited here, I get to let go of those. And one of the things I get to see is that there are a million billion different ways of accounting for things which are not the ones that I've, the sort of the personal myths that I've taken to be the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why reading, talking to people, walking in the woods, being taught by the trees, reading books about science, poetry. I mean, I could list, the list of things you can learn from is endless, of course. Letting them in that way has proven to be incredibly helpful. More last thing I think is for now is more importantly is I'm finding that the more I let go, the more opportunity I have to step into life. So there's lots that's called for, you know, in our own lives and for one another, and the less sure I am, and boy, Lizzie, I realize I still have a whole ton of stories that I think I'm really sure about, and I bump up against them often when they don't work out.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, every time it seems that, like, that's the way that's helpful.
Yeah, I'm watching myself in response to what you're saying and feeling just how strong it feels when I'm in a story or in an interpretation, and how this invitation to learning is such a powerful one, because it's so hard to do that. You know, our being right about what's happening, either to me or inside of me or in the world, or so hard to let go, as you're saying, like, if learning is letting go of the fixedness that we're feeling or manufacturing, it's a really big deal to be a learner. And finding a way to be curious about things that we think we already know what they are is the way out of a pattern that keeps coming, for example. It's the way through feelings that feel like they're never going to go away. And this whole thing of our relationship to what's happening is the most powerful place to work. Feels like what the invitation to learning is all about. And I think, you know, this is the thing about Parker Palmer's work as well, is that he is such an experienced educator, wise man, wonderfully compassionate, kind, interesting, curious, connected to humans person. And his stories in The Courage to Teach about what it means to be a teacher and to be accountable for what's happening in a room, for example, is such a story of what it is to be a learner, i.e. So one of the things that I get from his book is that he doesn't blame his students for things being the way that they are, that he takes responsibility for how he's being, that they would be that way as the holder of something. And as the holder, as each of us being the holder of our lives, this invitation, I think, is to be really open to understanding that we're interpreting all the time, but that because we're interpreting, an interpretation has the possibility of not being real. It has the possibility of being something we are making something into by the way we're thinking and feeling and relating to it, rather than it actually being true. And for me, that feels like a very empowering place to sit and relate to my life. And I'm just thinking of someone I know at the moment who's experiencing some real deep darkness, prolonged deep darkness. And I feel like when I feel into that space, which I also know in myself, like I feel like I can feel it when I'm in conversation with them, like I really can. And it's frightening, and it feels like it won't go away, and all kinds of interpretations I have on it. And the fact that there is a way that one could open into that feels like the biggest kind of hopefulness, so that we're not stuck with something, but we can ask it questions and be with it and be curious, as you were saying, like bring this kind of curiosity to what we think is a done deal. Like, I'm going to be depressed for the rest of my life, for example. That's it. This is just here. There's nothing I can do about it. And then being invited into the question about interpretation and the question about the story I have about what's going on, and seeing what it might mean to loosen my grip on the story and see what wants to be felt, what wants to be heard, what wants to be explored. And this thing as well, Justin, about, you know, you have blind spots, I have blind spots, things we can't see because it mostly feels too unsafe to be able to make contact with them. When we're in conversation with another human being, and when we're being held by someone else who doesn't have the same blind spots as us, or the same agenda as us for life because you're a different human being to me. That kind of learning and letting go is possible because somebody else's perspective, somebody else's interpretation can free us and have us wriggle out of our own in some way. And I think for me, that's what another big part of what this is, this third space thing and turning towards life is all about, is opening into one another's realities, one another's experiences, so that I'm not just sealing myself in again and again by my own thinking and my own interpreting. And that's what I so appreciate about all the sources that we bring, the conversations that we have, what we bring to each other in conversation. It's really different, which means that I can grow, because it's not just somebody the same as me, or even me, hashing over the same thing in the same way again and again, which often happens in my mind. It's like, oh my gosh, here I am again. I'm in the same paradox or the same polarity where I cannot believe I'm thinking the same thing again.
Yes.
And I'm feeling the same thing again. And those points are the points where I think to bring it to another person's system of interpretation that's holding me with kindness and generosity and love and spaciousness in seeing who I am more clearly than I can myself, this learning can happen in that. And there's such power in conversation and opening to other people's world and what they've learned, because what you've learned is different to what I've learned. And what you're learning is different to what I'm learning. But if we can cross those worlds over, this thing that Merlin's prescribing feels ever possible.
Yes. There's a way in which, because this quote comes from a book, it's very easy to imagine that what Merlin is talking about is sit with a book, which, as you know, I think is a wonderful thing, is I think books are amazing things. But I'm particularly taken by what you say about who we can be for one another. And just to re-say something that you said, which is maybe in a slightly different way, the way it's occurring to me is the stories, the interpretations that we get stuck in, you know, when you were saying that situation where you find yourself thinking the same thoughts again. Boy, is that just an ordinary human thing to do. So when we meet somebody who stands in a different story, who's prepared to be in contact with us and bring their interpretation and not give up on it in order to be, like if when you talk to me, and I know this has been certainly much, it's something I've been working with for years, because the easiest thing to do is you bring me your story, and because I want to be liked by you or loved by you or be acceptable to you, I'll drop everything that I can see in order to agree with you. It's a really easy move to make. And on an initial level, so that we can make contact with one another, I completely understand it. And then it really helps for us to be able to stay porous to one another's interpretations, and also to not give up on what we see and what we have to bring. And this point that you make about kindness, so there's a kind of kindness, and I suppose what it is a kind of dignifying of one another that we need to engage into, so that we can be in mutual curiosity about the different ways in which we see one another and see, make sense of what's going on with one another, and bring our understanding and our observations to one another. And then if we can hang out in that space, so you can talk to me in ways that show me where I've got stuck without taking so much care of me that you won't tell me anything that's outside of my own story, and I can listen and notice, oh, I have this kind of response or this kind of reaction to what you said. That kind of relational field is so important, and it's what I think coaching is, for example, and it's what I think this conversation is. And it calls on us to be the kind of learners who aren't just open to hearing some new idea or hearing some different perspective, but are as curious about our own internal experience and process as well as what we're hearing. So like to be able to notice, for example, what you said, and this is one of the things I've been inquiring over the last few days, is noticing here I am, I'm stuck again in the same story. I wonder what that is, which is not about the story. It's about the relationship to the story. Or when I read something, when I read Parker Palmer's book, for example, can I read it in a way that isn't just reading to be convinced by him, or isn't just reading to bolster my own point of view? Like, I'll read the bits that I agree with and skip past the bits I don't. Can I read and at the same time notice I'm really annoyed about this part, or I'm really confused about this part, or I feel defensive about this part? So when we can start to do that, I think we have a chance of learning. T.H. White says, learn why the world wags and what wags it. Like, there's the big scale, which is probably beyond most of us because it's so massively complex and it's really worth being curious about, but we'll never grasp it. But there's also the intimate scale. Can I find out what wags me, anything about it, and what happens between us, even whilst we're talking about whether there's reason to hope or despair or, you know, all the kind of topics we might get into talking about. And I think that's hard. It's hard for many of us. That's why we also really need one another, because we need, it really helps to be with somebody else who can say, it's okay, I'll be with you whilst you grapple with this. And I won't demand an answer from you, and I won't make you go faster, and I won't insist that you be different to how you are, and nevertheless, I'll be present with you and bring what I have to bring and not hold back on that either. All of that has to happen.
Yeah. I'm just thinking about that bit, Justin, where you said, you know, can I read and notice my defensiveness and notice my confusion, and that kind of self-noticing. I feel like that's such a big kind of prerequisite step to the next step or something. Like, if I can slow down enough to be able to see my reaction, to be able to notice that I'm activated or slinking away or giving up or dismissing or being condescending in myself, in my mind, to something. Being aware of those things feels like such a... Otherwise, we're just enrolling everything into the story we're already in without opening into the world in a way that we could learn from it. So that noticing, that present awareness of what's happening from my part feels like such a critical skill for us to develop. Noticing what's happening for me here, that I might be able to see clearly what my interpretation is, what my response is, feels like the way in to things opening, to things ever being different. Otherwise, we don't really have anything to work with. We just have a the world is being done to me stance, or it's not my fault and it's just happening this way, or I am how I am, or, you know, I notice myself kind of having that reaction sometimes, like, well, this has been like this for a really long time. How am I supposed to shift this thing that doesn't seem to be going anywhere?
Yeah.
And without noticing... You know, so I have a bit of a kind of sacrifice narrative that happens sometimes, where I end up doing something that I don't want to be doing and nobody's with me and I'm thinking, how did this come about? And if I didn't stop to notice how come I'm feeling this way, you know, what am I doing that's having me feel this way? What kind of bodily experience am I having? Whose voice is in my head? Who am I relating this to in my family system? You know, lots of questions come, and it means that I can instead of just finding myself in deeper and deeper sacrificial circumstances and situations and feeling it even more and justifying myself even more for feeling that way, I can see all the ways that I'm not asking for help. I can see all the ways that I did things that had it turn out that I'm on my own doing something that I don't want to be doing without any help, without any conversation, without any assistance, whatever. And if I didn't have that piece of information available to me of how am I doing this that's having it feel sacrificial, like how am I participating in this job or in this task that's having me feel left out of the world? You know, what even in me thinks it's possible to be left out of the world? And asking these questions in service of my awareness, it's not that I'm not going to end up in those situations anymore, but it does allow me the chance to participate differently and also ask some questions about how I might not end up in exactly the same situation again because of things I could do. I could make requests. I could share with people how it feels to be doing that thing. So when they ask me, they know that I'm likely to feel something. So I feel like that feels like the really big invitation to me now is really deepening my sense of what my response is to things and how I can cultivate that awareness more closely by slowing down, by watching, by being care-filled about how I encounter myself and being honest. You know, some of the stuff's really shameful that we might have to admit to, that we are watching in ourselves as it arises. Certainly loads of stuff I don't really want to be honest about myself around, to do with feeling like I'm in a sacrificial, horrible situation where I kind of resentfully do things. That's not a part of me that's pretty or I would like to present to the world. And yet, in that honesty, something different becomes possible.
It's like cultivating the capacity to be critically reflective about ourselves. And I don't mean criticizing, of course, when I say that, but to this process of paying attention to how am I in relationship to whatever it is that's happening or what I'm learning, and being able to then ask questions, bring kindness and curiosity. And when I say critical reflection, I also mean, you know, not believing everything we think, not believing every stand we take. And like you say, it also often requires owning up to ourselves and to other people. Like for me, owning up to how afraid I can feel and not trying to be look strong and together all the time, which is the super easy story for me. Never upset anybody by letting on to how confused and how terrified I am. But if we can't ask those questions, all we can do is be sort of passive consumers of things, searching out experiences or reading or whatever kind of learning in order to bolster our current position. And I think that today, and it's a sort of sweet irony that we're doing this on Facebook, because it makes the technology is so brilliant for sharing things. But we increasingly live in a world in which there are systems and organizations that can make lots and lots of money out of identifying ways in which we stay the same and then feeding exactly that thing. And the amount of data that's being collected on us so that we get just what will confirm our worldview and never be too disconfirming and never be too surprising and keep us scrolling and scrolling and scrolling without even asking, what am I doing scrolling through this timeline? What's actually going on for me as I do it? Why am I still here 20 minutes after I happen to stumble into it? And it so happens that it takes this, something of this orientation, to be able to lift ourselves out of that automatic, habitual, very often fear-filled or shame-filled loop that keeps going. We have to be able to ask exactly the question you're asking. So I think it's really important for our flourishing and our well-being and our mutual life. It's what makes community possible and friendship possible and family possible and all those kind of things. But it's also what it's called for, so that we can continue to take up our freedom in a world that's getting ever more sophisticated at feeding our asleepness.
Yeah.
So so we are busy. We've reached that moment where we have to stop. Then you are taking an in-breath to say something.
So I want to say one more thing, which is that just in response to your Facebook scrolling not in human relationship thingy, we have a couple of chances in January for people to be with us, and I just wanted to say that. So on the 14th of January, me and Holly, my wonderful sister Holly Holden, are going to be gathering on, so it's Monday the 14th of January, 7 till 9 p.m. in Hammersmith, and you can find the details in Turning Towards Life. Justin posted them yesterday or the day before. And also Justin is doing a 2-day program on the 21st and 22nd of January in London as well. And it would be wonderful if we can meet in person. And I know that events that we've done before where we meet people from Turning Towards Life, it's like a complete joy. And we would so love it if we could continue the conversation in body, in person with you. So if you're interested in any of that, the links are in the feed, if you like, for Turning Towards Life.
We will post them again. Both of these are going to be exquisite events. And I just want to say that the last time that I ran the our Foundations of Coaching program, Coaching to Excellence, almost everybody in the room had come because of Turning Towards Life, which was such a delight. And the thing particularly to say now is that it's really 2 days on this topic that we've been talking about. It's 2 days about how might we learn and how might we help one another to learn. So drop us a line if you're interested, and we can make it possible for you to join us. Yeah. Thank you, as always. Well, to you, Lizzie, for such a thing to be in this long, long conversation, but also to everyone. We are so grateful that you're here and with us. And as somebody very sweetly said, they came across this last week and sent me a link saying, I appear to be 63 weeks late for the party. And I want to say, it doesn't matter when you join, we're really glad to have you here. And everything that we've done before is always available on turningtowards.life. So if you're up for it, there are many hours of conversation there for you to join. And all being well, we will see you when the calendar year has turned. It'll be January by the time we're back together again next, and we'll see you then.
Happy New Year, everybody, and thank you for being with us for this whole year, calendar year so far. It's amazing.
Yes. Bye-bye, everyone.